Welcome, members and guests, to the June 27th program of the City Club of Eugene. Greetings to our broadcast audiences on community television, and thanks to all of you for joining us. Our program today is What is the Oregon Education Investment Board Up To? I'm Marlene Nesri, City Club President for 2014-15. A special thank you to KLCC Radio for airing these programs at 6:30 on Monday nights and for archiving the broadcasts on their website. Our sponsors today are the Oregon Country Fair, July 11th, 12th, and 13th, 2014, coming right up. Gado, Chermate, and Balthrop PC, a law firm for our community. And Dot Dotson's, imaging experts for over 80 years. And for supplying our office space, we thank KPFF Consulting Engineers. A quick reminder that these programs are free for our listening audience, but it does cost real money to produce them and a lot of volunteer effort. Your contributions are most welcome and completely tax deductible. Our program today is coordinated by Bob Cassidy and takes a look at how how Governor Kitzhaber's will focus on an education plan, his 40-40-20 goal. Nancy Golden will explain how the governor's education initiative will affect Oregon students. A key focus of the Oregon Investment Board is to drive school policies that support student transitions from one level of education to the next. That support is to start at the early learning level and continue through college and into careers. Our presenter today is Dr. Nancy Golden, State of Oregon's Chief Education Officer. Sheldon Berman, 4J Superintendent, will introduce our speaker. Thank you.
Well, I have the great privilege and honor of introducing Dr. Nancy Golden. I believe many of you know her and have heard her speak before and would agree with me that Nancy has been a tremendous force for good in Oregon education for four decades. Just a year ago, she tried to retire, but the governor called her back into action, and she is going stronger than ever. In her 40 years in public education, Nancy has held many roles. She's been a special education teacher, a curriculum coordinator, a special education department director, a deputy superintendent, and for a decade she was superintendent in the Springfield Public Schools. Somewhere in there, she also received her doctorate from the University of Oregon, taught at the University of Oregon, and served as a director of the Administrative Licensure Program. How does anyone pack that much into a career? Well, I'll tell you that Nancy doesn't sleep. She's up at 4 a.m., if not earlier, getting ready for her jazzercise class, which frankly, given her energy level, she could probably lead, and she definitely sets the pace. From there, it's energy and enthusiasm all day long. I don't think I've ever met someone who has more energy, who takes the bright side of every issue and challenge, and who sees wisdom in the nuances of conversations with whomever she meets. Nor have I met anyone who can brighten people's day and their work in the way Nancy can through the acknowledgement she offers and the support she readily supplies. She brings humor and joy to people's efforts and builds enthusiasm by putting herself out there as an example. I've had the privilege of watching her on a couple of her opening day performances in Springfield, and whether that was riding a bicycle onto the stage or hosting a flash mob to get everyone dancing and singing, Nancy has a way of infecting people with enthusiasm, commitment, and the desire to make a difference for young people. However, her most important quality is the gift of leadership that she offers to those of us toiling in the field of education. We've acknowledged her with awards like the 2012 Tom Rule Leadership Award for Equity from the Oregon Leadership Network, the 2009 Springfield Alliance for Equity and Respect for Human Rights Leadership Award. She was named Springfield's first citizen in 2008 and selected as Oregon Superintendent of the Year in 2011. But the greatest acknowledgement is the recognition that she is the best person to lead education policy in the state of Oregon as our Chief Education Officer. In that capacity, she has toured the state, communicated weekly with every educator in the state. I received her email earlier today, as a matter of fact, her weekly email, and built relationships with multiple constituencies, from legislators to business leaders to parent organization leaders. Her talent is connecting with people, building trust and respect through listening and honest and open dialogue. Her vision is unwaveringly focused on what's in the best interest of children. Her commitment is to see Oregon's public education system reestablished as one of the finest in the country. Her energy is focused on realizing the governor's and the state's commitment to all children graduating college and career ready, and her heart is in inspiring children, educators, and parents to strive for the best we can be. I believe we're fortunate to have Nancy lead education in our state, and we're fortunate to have her here with us today to share her thoughts about the direction the state is pursuing. And without further comment, let me introduce Dr. Nancy Golden.
Thank you, Shelley, for that great introduction. That was really touching. And even more so, thank you for being such a great colleague with me when I was superintendent in Springfield and your years being here as superintendent in Eugene. You've just been a tremendous partner in all of the work. And Shelley has worked very closely, actually, at the state level, too. He's been one of the lead superintendents who's helped us think about some of the reform that we're doing. So I really appreciate all of that. So today I am going to talk about the dream. I think it's the dream we hold for all of our children, and that is that all of them graduate from high school. 40% go into four-year colleges immediately or eventually. 40% go to two-year colleges. And for the 20% who aren't going to college right away, that they leave with the skills to go in the work world and to know when they're ready, they can also go on to college if they want to go on to college. I want to also acknowledge when we start talking about college that we also know a very important piece of college are what we call career technical education. So some of our students will go on to community colleges and get certificates or license that will put them right into the world of work, and we know that that's very important. But we want them to have the skills if they decide to go on to have the skills too. So that's the dream, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what does the Oregon Education Investment Board do, which is who I work for, and what are the big initiatives that we're working on to realize this dream. A lot of people say to me, do you really think every single child is going to get there? And I say, well, I'm going to die making sure it happens. So, you know, I think it's definitely something we're aspiring to. But the one thing that is different than I think how we've typically thought of education is when we think of education, we often think of K-12. That's where most of the conversations are. This is a system of starting at birth to college and career and through college and career. So just think about if we could ensure that every child came to kindergarten ready to learn, then that dream of getting all children to graduate and all children to meet the 40-40-20 goal is much easier. Now, this doesn't mean we're going to say we're going to start with this year's kindergarten and forget about the rest of the kids. Of course, we have to think about all the students along the pathway. But it does get easier if you start proactively and make sure students have the skills earlier. And you all have a pamphlet. If you don't mind taking this out, I'm going to kind of guide us through the pamphlet. This is what I use. So you can walk away with something, and you can think about it. And if there's any questions you have, you can get a hold of me by going to our website. I do send out a communication every Friday, and I answer all emails usually the next morning, very early in the next morning. The way this pamphlet works is we've got our pathway, and inside we've got four major areas we're going to be working on. One is from poverty to prosperity. The second is educational equity. The third is reading changes the game. And the fourth is paving the pathway to the future. Right now, I just want to focus on the reading piece for 1 second. When I said it's important to start early, why I feel so certain about that and so passionate about that is what you'll see if you read this little section on this, is if you're reading proficiently by third grade, you have 4 times as much chance of graduating from high school. This, to me, is a moral imperative, to have every child reading by third grade. The other data, and it's right in the green box below, and the reference is on the back, is if students come to kindergarten as not ready to learn, or between kindergarten and third grade, if they have reading problems, if you intervene between kindergarten and third grade, 85 to 90% of the students will catch up by third grade and be proficient. After age 9, 75% of the kids never catch up. So think about a school system. Think about all the resource. I know George Shelley and I, and Al, who's a school board member, there's a lot of research resource put into remediation after third grade for reading. It's resource that's going to reach 25% of the make a difference for 25% of the students, not all of them. So starting early at birth through third grade is a critical aspect of making sure kids can move smoothly along the pathway. So it probably will not surprise you when I say third grade proficiency is one of the key initiatives. And as I write my legislative concepts as we speak, there will be a legislative concept around third grade proficiency in providing bringing together all the people, being clear about the research, providing some extra investment to get there. So many of you might know that in a year from now, we're going to be having all-day kindergarten. All-day kindergarten is a strategy to get to third grade proficiency. We think it's important, but we know when we have all-day kindergarten, we have to be focused on how do we use all-day kindergarten to help us reach that third grade proficiency. Now, what makes people nervous about all-day kindergarten? They say that they think kids need to play and kids need to do all of these other things. And I totally believe in that, too, but I'm telling you, as a teacher, you can teach literacy skills and it can be fun. And I'm in classrooms all over the state and I see it. I see little kids like the teacher saying, find the sound, and they're running around the classroom and they all jump on a when they get there. So it doesn't mean that it's not fun. But what we find is for many parents, from the moment a child is born, they're singing to their child, they're talking to their child, they're playing with their child, they're reading to the child, and those are pre-literacy skills. What the research tells us is some children at the age of 3 hear 30 million less words than other children. Now think about that, and think about when a child goes to kindergarten, how fewer concepts, vocabulary they'll have. So this is really all-day kindergarten is really providing for maybe students who didn't get the opportunities to be played with or talked to or read to for whatever reason, to make sure they're doing that. So this is fun. It's the kind of fun you had with your baby. It's the kind of fun you had with your 3-year-old and 4-year-old and 5-year-old, but it's building literacy skills. So that's a critical concept. So there's this pathway. We're going to start singing, talking, playing with children at a very young age, and when they come to kindergarten, they'll be ready to learn, so we'll get them to third grade proficiency, and then we're going to move them along the way. So that's Reading Changes the Game. Now, the other key area, so one thing the Oregon Education Investment Board does is it creates that pathway, the vision of 40-40-20, the pathway of 40-40-20, and then it manages key transitions. That's a major responsibility. So we see from birth to third grade proficiency is a major transition. We see some points that it really has bigger transition points. Like, we know that we have agencies like Head Start or Relief Nursery that are doing extraordinary jobs with children. So they go through that and then they show up in a kindergarten. And there hasn't been a systematic handoff between those organizations. What I can tell you is that Head Start does a fabulous job with parents and engaging parents in parent training. I think as a K-12 educator, I could have learned a lot from them. So what we know is between the end of preschool to the beginning of kindergarten, we're going to be more systematic about that handoff. And what we know are that there's some children that if they could have a 3-week spending time with a teacher, that would make their whole kindergarten experience much more successful. And I'll give you a concrete example. Some children spend time in homes where there's a lot of yelling. There could even be some physical abuse going on there, maybe between the spouses. It's disorganized, it's loud. And those kids survive by tuning out. It's like, I'm going to survive by getting the noise out and doing the best I can to survive. So they show up in kindergarten, and the first thing the teacher says is, listen big. We've got some important things to learn. And when this, why? And so you say, why should a child who's been in a home like that trust this teacher that they've just met, that it's going to be any different than what they've experienced from 0 to 5? So we tell them to listen big, and they don't, and we all of a sudden feel like we've identified a child who might have a behavior program. There's a program called KITS. Springfield and Bethel are working on it. It's really with research from OSLC, social scientists who have had a lot of experience in foster care, and they bring these children in and they start teaching them these skills to trust people, to listen to people, to know there are environments where it's going to be safe for them to want to listen. So by the time they get to the kindergarten classroom, they have all those skills that kids will bring into the kindergarten classroom around how am I really ready to interact with an instruction and learning with a teacher. So that's one key transition. The other key transition is on the other end, what we've referred to as 11 through 14. That is, if you're reading proficiently at third grade and you're moving along and you've got the skills to go to college, every child should have the opportunity to go to college. For us to say to our kids, if you have the skills and knowledge, we are going to make sure you can get to college, I think that's a really critical thing, and we're really working hard on that transition. And my colleague sitting at the table, who was the Dean of the College of Journalism, immediately asked me, tell me about college. Tell me what you're doing about the expense of college. And so I want to talk about that, because that's the other transition. We've got the birth to 3, or pre-literacy to literacy, and we've got high school. We say 11 through 14, but we really start at 9th grade through college, and I want to talk about what we're doing with that. So the first thing is we're really working hard for kids in high school to get more college credit in high school. We all know that with the financial reductions we've had, a lot of high school schedules aren't full. Kids might have a period or two as a senior or that they've completed all their requirements and they don't need to be in school. Wouldn't we prefer for them to be taking a college credit at that time, a free college credit at that time? So one thing we're going to do, we're working really closely between higher ed and K-12 to come up with ways that more students can get college credit. That might be done by a high school teacher teaching a college class or a college professor coming to a high school and teaching a class. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, and I know many of us have experienced this, I experienced this as a superintendent, a child says, I have 40 college credits leaving high school. And then they're starting to tick off that they're almost getting paid a first year of college. And then they arrive at the college, and the college says, oh, well, those are nice credits, but they don't count here, or they don't count for this program. So there hasn't been the articulation between high school and college. So not only are you getting college credits, but you're getting college credits that count. Now, you might sit here and go, well, that seems like a heavy lift. Well, I'll tell you, one of the joys of this job is I'm traveling all over the state, and there is a high school now, it's actually Hermiston High School, who has articulated with the community college and the high school and the four-year college exactly the courses the kids take in high school, so that will count for a year. For some kids, it counts for 2 years. And those kids move smoothly into these programs without ever taking a credit that doesn't count and taking many, many credits. So one way we begin to afford it is by that sort of increased opportunity and coordination. But the other thing that happens sometimes, so that's if you're coming from high school. I bet some of you, I'm going to ask, in fact, because this certainly happened to me. I had a daughter who started at Portland State University, was a softball player, decided she wanted to come home to finish up as a Duck, go Ducks, right? And when she transferred, she lost a year of college because, and sometimes it was exactly the same course that she took at one place as opposed to the other place, but the way the system was working is that a department head would get to decide whether they got to count that, and department heads, feeling great about their university, could say, well, they took it there, but I'm sure there isn't as good as here, so if they took it over here, I think it would really benefit the student. Really good intentions, honestly, best of intentions, but all of these things add up to much more costly higher education and not taking advantage of the seamless system. And like I said, the Oregon Education Board is all about one seamless system, and those are examples of some of the barriers we see along the system that we need to improve to make it a smooth system. So my job is creating the system, helping kids move successfully along the system. I mean, I don't do this child by child. It's at a policy level and working through early learning areas, K-12, community colleges, and higher ed. Oh, three more minutes, okay. My other job is being a barrier buster, and that's my very favorite thing to do, and I've just given you the example of some of the barriers that we've busted. And I don't want to say that I personally am doing it. I work with legislators, I work with board members, but we're really getting some barriers busted. And if I had more time, I'd tell you about some of the ones that we have done. So you can ask that as a question if you want. And then the last part of my job is to suggest key investments to the governor's budget and then his budget to legislators that we believe are going to leverage the most to get kids successfully along the pathway, like the investment I'll be suggesting around reading proficiency by third grade. So with that, I think I'll stop and give time for questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Golden. Our first question will be asked by George Russell, former 4J superintendent. Thank you.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
In a recent guest viewpoint in the Register Guard, a student representative to the Eugene School Board and a graduating international high school student shared concerns about his high school experience. In that piece, he addressed a number of areas that the OEIB is moving forward on as part of the 40-40-20 goals, including strength and relevance of curriculum, graduation rates, teacher quality, and educational equity. If you believe there's some truth in his observations and conclusions, as I do, then one must ask whether the systemic and institutional changes that are necessary can really be accomplished in the time frames established in the 40-40-20 goals. And in the meantime, what will be the fate of those students who are being underserved in the existing system? One of the questions asked by the student was, and I quote, "What does equity mean in the Eugene School District? Is equity taken seriously, or is it used as a fashion statement and a political position that serves to improve the careers of a selected few?" Unquote. My question is about the OEIB's equity lens that you've talked about previously. How will it be operationalized by the OEIB to apply to local school districts, the state's colleges and universities, and what will be the tangibles that communities can expect to see to know that it is being taken seriously and that things are changing for the better?
Thank you. That's a really important question. So I'll come at this in a few different ways. I mean, the first area in terms of equity that we know is critical that we get at, and we are getting at it, and we'll be getting at it more substantially, is that the majority of our students in the opportunity gap are students of color. And I'm calling this an opportunity gap because I believe strongly it's because we have not brought the culturally specific resources to bear on really helping all these kids and get out of the achievement gap, not only culturally specific curriculum, but a lot of other things. So, for example, what we're seeing, this is what our state data looks like. If you've got a group, and if you say this group down here is the lowest group in terms of when you disaggregate data, and then you have another group and another group, and unfortunately, the groups that are in the bottom are more our kids of color, and then you keep going up, what we've seen is that we're getting better. It's getting better. But the gap isn't closing. So everybody's doing a little better, but this is what it's got to get to. It's got to get to that the gap is closing. So what that means is we need to focus on all students. All students need opportunities, and a lot of things we can do for our accelerated students come under what I just talked about when I talked about what we could do in college to have it in high school. But we also have to put particular focus on those kids inside that gap. And so we do have to bring extra resource to closing that gap. And we need to do it as proactively as you can. So that's why you've seen our governor invest in early intervention. We need more Head Starts. We have more slots in Head Starts than the federal government gives us. In fact, I think we have close to twice as many. I think you'll continue to see more investments in the early end. And by the way, our governor worked on this. Now President Obama is saying we need more preschool programs, paid preschool for four-year-olds and three-year-olds. And probably we can't afford that for everyone, but at least for the kids who are at risk. If we do that and everyone's ready to learn, everyone is advantaged by this because then everyone can move on and we don't have to spend time during the day on remediation for any of our children. So one is, what do we really do with kids in the gap? But the second thing, which has been probably the thing I've enjoyed working on most since I've been in this job, is I sat in a room, quite honestly, with a group of people who looked like me, Caucasian people, trying to think about how to fix the education system for those students inside the achievement gap. And I stood up and said, we have to have a group of people who represent the children inside our schools. We can't keep having all of us Caucasian people making decisions when we have many other cultures. So we brought together a group, and we need these to be people who are leaders in working and getting results. So what I'll tell you are there are culturally specific organizations that are getting unbelievable results that we haven't been able to get in our public schools. SEI is an example, Self Enhancement Inc. I mean, what they do with high school students is unbelievable. And they have their own charter school, and now they're working inside of Portland Public Schools to work with our primarily African-American students. So we know that they knew something because they understand the culture, and they're trusted by the culture in a much deeper way. So we've been working on this with third grade reading. And it's been amazing because when we went out and we talked to parents from different cultures, they told us things like this. Like we talked to one particular culture when they said, you know, when people tell me to read to my kids, I thought that was the school's job. I just didn't realize I was supposed to. And I'm not a reading teacher. It's not that I don't want to do it. I don't know how to read with kids. That's when we came up with this whole concept of play with them, talk to them, read to them. And when we said to them, if you're talking to your child, you're helping teaching your child to read. You're just doing the pre-literacy skills. So when we started going out and asking the communities, I think there's a lot of assumptions when certain people aren't reading to their kids. And I think when you ask them, they either felt they didn't have the skills, they honored the teacher and the teacher's skills, or they didn't, or it just seemed like too big of a thing, like I'm not a reading teacher. When you tell people to sing to their kids, to story tell to their kids, they're on it like that. And we learn that by talking to the people that, who are of not only our culture, but different cultures. So we do have to spend more time with culturally specific groups to learn about the best way to work with their kids and help their kids achieve. So those are just a few things. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take a few minutes now for the tables to formulate their questions.
You're tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, KMPQ Roseburg. We're on the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet. This is KLCC, NPR for Oregonians.
Welcome back to the June 27th City Club program. What is the Oregon Education Investment Board up to? Our guest speaker is Dr. Nancy Golden, and we'll start with questions from our audience.
My name is Arnold Ismack. I'm a City Club member, and it was a pleasure, Nancy, to hear you so optimistic about everything in our education system. But one point that you didn't really deal with was, to me, one of the biggest problems we have today. If we get these high school graduation rates that we want, what are we doing so that kids can afford to go to college? The tuition rates have climbed enormously in the past decade or two. What is the governor and your organization going to do to bring those tuition rates down?
And I think I talked about one piece of that, which is if kids can get more college credits in high school, or in even, like I said, some up to 2 years, well, in essence, you've cut your cost in half because you've got 2 years done. But I know you're talking about the cost per credit, too. You know, I think the second thing you're going to see is lots more resource put towards scholarships for kids. I mean, we're working towards that. We've also been working, I think you all heard about this, Oregon got tremendous, not only press, but questions around this, is the play it forward, pay it back, so that college would be free, and then you start paying it back once you're working a certain percentage to pay it back. That's something we're studying. We don't know if that's really something, you know, it's a great big idea, but is it really something that can be implemented? We're still trying to figure that out. So, you know, the third thing, of course, would be, and it did happen at the last session, is that they gave more money to institutions to make sure they didn't raise tuition. But to really lower tuition just means we've got to send more money out to our institutions of higher ed or in community college. And, of course, the economy's not growing as fast as the needs. I'm sure Shelley would say, and George, K-12 needs more money, too. We still have huge class sizes. But what's really related to that is we do think of when kids go out with the skill in. When I talk about career technical education, why that's partly so important to us is we have industry saying we've got jobs. You're not producing anyone who can do the jobs, and we're going overseas to get this job. So we're working really close with industry. So when people get out, whether it's 4-year degrees, 2-year degrees, or certificates and licenses, they have jobs. Jobs in Oregon are being filled by students in Oregon. Once that happens, those people start working, they start paying taxes, and they can have a wonderful life, and they can pay back through taxes to give more money so that we really can have more money for our education system. So it's really a cycle that includes economic development, more money for education. So, and we're working on all of those.
Hi, Linda Jensen, City Club member since 2010. I was wondering if there is any effort, particularly in the high school level, to make classes is really relevant to kind of life skills that students need nowadays. And I'm thinking in terms of, say, in math classes, learning how to balance your checkbook, finding out how compound interests work, what happens if you don't pay your credit card off, how to figure out which product in a grocery store is actually cheaper, that kind of thing, to kind of make kids more interested and give them the skills to get through life better.
Yeah. You know, that's why I'm just a real strong advocate for career technical education. That is what career technical education is. And when we think of career technical education, the old vision is welding, not that that's not important and not part of it, auto mechanics, but it's also nursing programs where students start taking classes around science, math in high school, and then they're actually out either in hospitals or doing placements. So it really is about, really, how do we apply work? And I think we can learn from career technical education. Every classroom, I think, should have application to it. So we have science classes where they do water testing. In Springfield, we tested our farmers' water, and it was a great experience for the kids, and the community loved it. So we are working very hard for people to see that's the way all teaching should be.
Hi, I'm Joe Von Hippel, City Club member for a long time. Thank you very much for your talk. It was a wonderful talk, and I'm so glad that you're going to have more kids in preschool. I think it's so important, but that's not my question. My question is, what do you think about teaching morality in schools? We have had a lot of discussion about morality in Eugene since you know what happened. Yeah, and how would it be if the kids learned a little bit about what they might expect and how to deal with it, and what do we have in this organization? What do we have in Eugene? That who can they go to? You know, all that kind of thing.
So what we hear about now are kind of two sets of skills. We have our academic skills, and then they have what's called, they call them not, well, some people call them soft skills, but there are all these other skills. I really think the skill you're talking about there is decision-making and really understanding how you make good decisions. And actually, there's a group at Stanford University called Decision Education Foundation that's working very hard to get that curriculum inside of schools, and I think you'll be seeing more curriculums like that happening. I mean, that makes you go through a decision chain where everything you do, you look at all what's the intended or unintended consequences, and by the end of the chain, you make a decision that's really going to be good for you and kind to everybody else in the world. So, yes.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Beth Giroux, City Club member for a number of years. My question is, this year we have seen, I've really appreciated the number of dollars that have been put toward innovations and the innovation grants, and they've come fast and furious throughout the school year this year. My question has to do with sustainability of effort once the grant money runs out and replication of any good practices that come out of those grants.
Yeah. So last session there was about $75 million set aside to really give grants. Back to the question about hands-on curriculum, some schools got grants to start getting that going. The idea of doing that was to incubate, to get good ideas out, to get people excited, to say, yes, if we try new things, we might be able to get to that 40-40-20 goal, or we will be able to get to that 40-40-20 goal. But those weren't scale-upable. If this district gets it or that district, and you know, you heard people say there's not, it takes too hard to write them. So we're taking all the good learning we've learned from those grants, and we will, because some of them are still for another year. And then probably what you're going to see is you're going to see strategic investments that go out to every district, every college, every university, with some sidebars around it. So it might say, we're going to give you this much extra money, but in exchange for that, you need to make sure we're really thinking about this around third grade reading. So you need to use evidence-based best practices. You need to be able to make sure you engage with community around helping kids learn to read, whatever it is. So we're learning from them, but we're going to scale up statewide in a little bit different way.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. The investment board sounds like money. And money is always an interesting aspect about anything in education. Has the board anticipated any priorities of where money will go first? What is the highest point that the board is interested in pushing?
We're still in the middle of legislative concepts, but again, if you think of the pathway and you think of the key transitions, I think that's where you're going to see money going. So more money towards high school graduation in the K-12 system, more money towards making sure we reach the third grade proficiency, more money towards closing the opportunity gap. That's only K-12. You'll see the same, you'll see some differences. I think at a community college, you're going to see more money going towards completion of the first year of community college, because what we know is if you get kids to complete the first year, they go to the second year, but we lose most of the kids in the first year of community college. So we want to give more money to ensure they get through the first year so they'll get through the second year. So those will be the areas. It will be the key leverage points that we believe will really help kids move smoothly along the pathway. Now, the other thing I have to say, it's a two-prong process. One is the floor is the money that goes out. So the money goes from the state to like 4J. We're still saying we need to raise that floor because we still feel all of our organizations need more on the base, meaning, you know, you got large class sizes, not because people are sitting around wanting large class sizes, because there's not enough resource to really get those down. So we also are certainly looking at large class size, and I know things like that. So money out to organizations and then some strategic money really geared towards key leverage points that will move kids along the pathway.
Jerry Smith, City Club member since 2003. I'm glad you finally mentioned class size. Class size and number of school days are really shortchanged in Oregon, and there's no doubt about it. If there were a smaller class size, you could do things like individualized educational programs that I've seen work with disabled and students. And I think every kid ought to have them because kids are not properly placed. They're either pushed ahead when they can't succeed or just not given the opportunities they need. I'm heavily invested in dealing with homeless people, and so many of them are telling me that they couldn't learn anymore and they stopped going in the eighth grade. They just felt they weren't, nobody knew who they were, and they just couldn't learn anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible, terrible waste of kids.
I agree with you. We need the resources to lower our class size and have longer school years, and I know the governor is very committed to that.
I'm Marge Ramey, been a City Club member forever, it seems to me. It seems to many people here as well, too. I'm representing several welcome guests at our table, and they have asked me to ask you this question. Recent investigations is showing that Oregon students and schools are suffering from chronic absenteeism. What is your plan to deal with this? Thank you.
Thank you. One piece I didn't get to talk about is, so we have these key outcomes targets along this pathway. And the first one is ready for kindergarten. The second one's reading proficiently at third grade. The third grade, the next one is the elimination of chronic absenteeism. In sixth grade, we've got that at ninth grade, too. So we know chronic absenteeism is a huge thing that we need to work on. And a lot of the $75 million that went out, we have people all over the state working on chronic absenteeism. And so in some sense, that becomes action research, and we're going to learn from that. But in addition to that, we also have a part of the OAIB is we have a small research into policy group. I mean, this is four people, so it's very small. But what we're currently doing is that we're going to actually go out and talk to people who have children who are chronically absent to find out why. Why is this happening to your child? We're going to do a complete review of the literature on around what are other states doing, and then we will put together sort of a policy piece about what we need to do about it. OEIB is a policy group. Oregon Department of Ed is the group that implements it. So we are working very hard on that, and I could, there's a lot of things being done initially. I think the best thing we did was put that on the Achievement Compact. Now, I'll tell you, people weren't happy when we did it. It's like, why are you putting this on the Achievement Compact? We already have so much we're accountable for. But our system basically counted when kids are gone 10 days in a row, and typically what you would do then is assume they had moved, or you would drop them because they're gone. But we weren't counting kids gone 3 days in September and 4 days in October and 2 days in November. And we really need to start counting those. And I think, and so we're aware of the problem. And again, because of George's question about equity, we do need to also use the equity lens here. And I'll give you an example. My family happens to be Jewish. On a Jewish holiday, a sacred Jewish holiday, my children might not be going to school. And as much as a teacher could tell me that's important, if I believe so deeply in that religion that I needed to have them in temple on Yom Kippur, I would do that. Well, there's lots of other cultures that people believe deeply about. So if you're Native American and someone in your family dies, you go hunt. It's part of the tradition. That we know that a lot of our Latino kids go back to Mexico during a winter period for celebrations. So we have to come up with solutions for that. I think online holds a lot of help for us. So if people are gone for things like that, there's some way for them to get online and catch up in a way that they haven't been able to before. But when you have a lot of different cultures like we're having in our state, which I just think is terrific, then we have to realize how we do school might need to be different in order to accommodate those cultures.
Eric Richardson with the Eugene Springfield NAACP. You spoke of the opportunity gap and the achievement gap. And my take on the problem is that we really are in many cases dealing with the emotional and motivational gap with our children. And I'm wondering if you could speak on how the 40-40-20 will address these issues in the minority community especially.
Yeah, I think some of these things become a vicious circle because I think if you don't read at grade level, it's pretty hard to sit in school in a very text-driven environment where you're asked to read a lot and respond to it. So I think the first thing you do is you make sure all kids have the skills to feel successful in school. It's pretty hard to want to come to school when you don't feel successful in school. It's also pretty hard to want to come to school when what's taught in that school is not culturally specific, or in fact is something like, that is really painful for people. So I get some of these complaints coming to me. So recently, I heard a concern about a Native American family who said there was a play where Native Americans were portrayed as savages throughout the whole thing, and there was no attempt to talk about all the wonderful traditions, the wonderful culture that is, and that was so painful for the children, a Native American in the class, they didn't want to come back. So we have to realize that when people come from different cultures, we need to create environments in our school where all these cultures are honest and honored and looked as a strength. And I'll tell you, if you haven't read The Power of the Crowd, read it, because what it will tell you is if you get the same group of people together who think alike, even if they're super bright, they don't do as well as a diverse group of people. This diversity is an absolute strength for us, and we've got to create this inside of our schools. So those would be some of the things.
I'm Roz Stein, City Club member. We were concerned about class size, but that has come up again, so I just got another question delivered to me. It would be about the question of really developing parent education opportunities. There's a wonderful group in Eugene called Parenting Now that does that. Mm-hmm. It used to be called Birth to Three. Yeah. But, especially in those early years, it's such a key that what is your policy saying and doing about that?
Yeah, and again, I think we can learn from parenting now is, you know, 0 to 5 program primarily, and I think that's where we really gain our greatest understanding around how to do parent education well. Well, parent education is one of the things I think when you start saying, when I said we might do an investment, and of course this would be a recommendation to a governor's budget that has to go through a legislative session, so how it comes in and how it comes out is, of course, you just have to wait and see. But some of the what we call boundaries or things we say you need to do, I think what you're going to see in there is working with community organizations and an increased commitment around parent education throughout the whole system. I'm talking about birth through college. So.
Hi, Craig Smith, City Club member since 1990. My question has to do with full day K. And where we are in that process, implementation, as I understand it, and I think as you said, is scheduled for next year, next school year. But there are lead times associated with capital improvements for many districts, and I haven't seen anything from the state, at least yet, supporting those systems, and they do take some time. Second is capacity in terms of teachers. How many teachers will we need, and how many are available now? And third, just funding. Will the funding for full day K come out of the normal school budget, or will it be supplemental? And have there been estimates about what those costs are? Thank you.
And Shelley's smiling because he's been working very hard on this with a group of superintendents. When we talk about third grade proficiency and the legislative concept we've put together, within that is money for kindergarten. Now, we're not defining, we're not going to say you need, there's this much for facilities, because some districts have already taken care of their facilities problems. So if it was had to be specifically for facilities, that punishes the people who got out in front of it, and I'm not saying everyone should have. There's certainly conditions why you do or don't. We're suggesting that we need to put new resource towards kindergarten, but it's more than kindergarten. It's reaching third grade proficiency. When I was superintendent in Springfield, people used to say we need all-day kindergarten. I said, well, first we've got to do the right things in half-day kindergartens to make sure we're going to get to hit the targets, which, again, is third grade reading. So when we're talking about all-day kindergarten, we've got to be very clear. It can't just be an extension of, you know, what we've done. We've got to really say, where are we trying to get our kids in terms of the skills, the foundational skills, and in a way that kids have a lot of fun while they're doing it. We need to create kindergarten programs that are very successful, and that's all been part of the proposal that people have put together. So, yes, there is a legislative concept that would do that, and it's our greatest hope that that moves right through all the systems.
Cappy, and I'm with Marge. I've been here a long time. In looking at the job which the Oregon Education Investment Board has to do in this 4420, we were wondering about whether they've given some thought to how they can involve professionals such as pediatricians, social workers, all the people that work with the families of the before kindergarten children, and whether they can put into their practices the idea of reading and singing and talking to their children, because they're on the ground with these parents who see them. Has there any thought been given to some kind of a program to do that?
Yeah, I wish I could be here with you all day. There's so much to talk to you about. You have such good questions. So in addition to what we're doing in education, call it reform, the healthcare has what's called the community care organizations, and community care is working. We're working, but we're also working together. And actually, Lane County is a model for this because they had their Success by Six program. So what you'll see in a lot, so the way this model is going to work is when someone has a baby, the doctor's not only looking at how healthy the baby is, the doctor is looking at all the other wraparound services this family might need. And if they see a family that they think for multiple factors might need to get their kids into some early programs, they'll be recommending that definitely you'll see doctors giving out literature about talk to your children, sing to your children, all of those things. It already does happen in lots of places. It's going to happen more because we're launching this literacy campaign in fall. So yes, we're working very close. We see them as, it's mainly through the community care organizations, but we see them as partners. I was on the community care organization when I was superintendent because I thought we got to do some things together. And I'm telling you, which was predominantly physicians on this, when you talked about let's work together on reading, they got so excited about that because that's so proactive and wonderful. And so I really think that the medical community really wants to help us on this stuff, and they are. So great idea, and it's beginning to happen.
Well, we were all sorry to hear that Dr. Berman will be leaving. He has been a great champion of what's called the AVID program and 4J. And this is a program, for those of you who don't know, that identifies children at risk and puts them in a cohort, and they have a class, I think, 6th through 8th, through 12th grade, and it helps them manage these transitions and prepares them for college. But it only serves a small percentage of the children who can benefit from it. And so, again, this is a question about scaling up. Is there, at the OEIB, is there an attempt to identify programs like this that work, that can be scaled up, and make recommendations to local school boards about encouraging them?
That's a great question. The Oregon Education Investment Board uses a tight, loose system. We define the outcomes students need, and we give the policy that they need. But we do not determine what programs will be used in schools. That's the job of the school boards. And I see many school board members here, and I don't think they want the state telling them which curriculum to use. We do say it needs to be evidence-based, and we do, and that is one example. I have to tell you, it happened yesterday. I have more people coming to my office telling me they have the exact right program for every single child in the state of Oregon. And if I started recommending one over the other, but what I would say about AVID is that AVID, not it used to work with a small group. Now they have what's called AVID for all schools, and I have gone and visited some of those schools, and they've been extraordinary. So we're certainly see our job as getting out there. Which of these programs seem to be making a difference? But we wouldn't choose it for a school district, nor would we make an investment in a particular program, but hopefully we get more money out to your institution so you can make an investment in things like AVID. And you're right, Shelley was a strong advocate for that. I learned about AVID through Shelley, so that was great.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Golden, for bringing clarity and vision to this City Club program. What is the Oregon Investment Board up to? And thanks again to our sponsors, Oregon Country Fair, Gatos, Turnside, and Balthrop PC, and Dot Dotsons. Enjoy Independence Day next Friday, July 4th. We'll meet again on July 11th at the Downtown Athletic Club to hear about the Oso Mudslide and the lessons for Oregon. Lunches for this program can be ordered on City Club's website or by contacting the office. Thanks so much, everyone, for coming.
Thank you.